Clip the Revolt from Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia at en.wikipedia.org. The Clip of the Revolt took place in January 1923 in the Clip of the region. The region, located north of the Niemen River, was detached from the East Prussia of the German Empire by the Treaty of Versailles and became a mandate of the League of Nations. It was placed under provisional French administration until a more permanent solution could be worked out. Lithuania wanted to unite with the region due to its large Lithuanian-speaking minority of Prussian Lithuanians and major part of Klaipėda, the only viable access to the Baltic Sea for Lithuania. As the Conference of Ambassadors favored leaving the region as a free city, similar to the Free City of Danzig, the Lithuanians organized and staged the revolt. Presented as an uprising of the local population, the revolt met little resistance from either the German police or the French army. The rebels established a pro-Lithuanian administration, which petitioned to unite with Lithuania, citing the right of self-determination. The League of Nations accepted the fait accompli, and the Klaipėda region was transferred as an autonomous territory to the Republic of Lithuania on February 17, 1923. After prolonged negotiations, a formal international agreement, the Klaipėda Convention, was signed in May 1924. The convention formally acknowledged Lithuanian sovereignty in the region and outlined its extensive legislative, judicial, administrative, and financial autonomy. The region remained part of Lithuania until March 1939, when it was transferred to Nazi Germany after the German ultimatum. Section 1. Background. Section 1.1. Lithuanian and Polish aspirations. The German-Lithuanian border had been stable since the Treaty of Melno in 1422. However, as a result of high migration, northern East Prussia had a significant Lithuanian-speaking population of Prussian Lithuanians, or Lietuvininkai, and was known as Lithuania Minor. The Klaipėda region covered 2,848 square kilometers, which included the Curonian Lagoon of approximately 412 square kilometers. According to contemporary statistics by Fred Hermann Due, 71,156 Germans and 67,259 Prussian Lithuanians lived in the region. The idea of uniting Lithuania Minor with Lithuania surfaced during the Lithuanian national revival of the late 19th century. It was part of the vision to consolidate all ethnic Lithuanian lands into an independent Lithuania. The activists also eyed Klaipėda, a major seaport in the Baltic Sea. It would become Lithuania's only deep water access to the sea, and having a port was seen as an economic necessity for self-sustainability. On November 13, 1918, 24 Prussian-Lithuanian activists signed the Act of Tilsit, expressing their desire to unite Lithuania Minor with Lithuania. Based on these considerations, the Lithuanians petitioned the Allies to attach the whole of Lithuania Minor to Lithuania. However, at the time Lithuania was not officially recognized by the Western powers and not invited into any post-war conferences. The Second Polish Republic regarded the Klaipėda region as a possible compensation for Danzig. After World War I, the Polish corridor provided access to the Baltic Sea, but the Free City of Danzig was not granted to Poland. In early 1990, Roman Dmowski, the Polish representative to the Paris Peace Conference, campaigned for the incorporation of Klaipėda region into Lithuania, which was then to enter into a union with Poland. The Polish formula was Klaipėda to Lithuania, Lithuania to Poland. Until the Polish-Lithuanian Union could be worked out, Klaipėda was to be placed under the temporary administration of the Allies. While such a union had a historic tradition in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, Lithuania categorically refused any such proposals. Worsening Polish-Lithuanian relations led to the Polish-Lithuanian War and dispute over the Vilnius region. However, the union idea was met favorably in Western Europe. In December 1921, Poland sent Marcel Szarota as a new envoy to the region. Due to his initiative, Poland and Klaipėda signed a trade agreement in April 1922. In addition, Poland attempted to establish its economic presence by buying property, establishing business enterprises, and making connections with the port. Section 1.2. French administration. Influenced by the Polish proposals, the Allies took Klaipėda region into account when signing the peace treaty with Germany. According to Article 28 of the Treaty of Versailles, effective January 10, 1920, lands north of the Niemen River were detached from the German Empire and, according to Article 99, were placed under a mandate of the League of Nations. The French agreed to become temporary administrators of the region while the British declined. The first French troops, the 21st Battalion of Chasseurs Alpins under General Dominique Joseph Audry, arrived on February 10, 1920. The Germans officially handed over the region on February 15. 2 days later, General Audry established a 7-member directorate, the main governing institution. After Lithuanian protests, 2 Prussian-Lithuanian representatives were admitted to the directorate, increasing its size to 9 members. On June 8, 1920, France appointed Gabriel Jean Petitsnet as the head of the civilian administration in the Klaipeda region. Petitsnet showed anti-Lithuanian bias and was favorable towards the idea of a free city. General Audry resigned on May 1, 1920, leaving Petitsnet the highest-ranking official in the region. French Prime Minister and Chairman of the Paris Peace Conference, Georges Clemenceau, commented that the Klaipeda region was not attached to Lithuania because it had not yet received de jure recognition. The Lithuanians seized this statement and further campaigned for the rights in the region, believing that once they received international recognition, the region should be theirs. As the mediation of the Polish-Lithuanian conflict over the Vilnius region by the League of Nations was going nowhere, the Klaipeda region became a major bargaining chip. Already in 1921, implicit Klaipeda for Vilnius offers were made. In March 1922, the British made a concrete and explicit offer. In exchange for recognition of Polish claims to Vilnius, Lithuania would receive de jure recognition, Klaipeda region and economic aid. The Lithuanians rejected the proposal as they were not ready to give up on Vilnius. After the rejection, the French and British attitudes turned against Lithuania and they now favored the free city solution. Thus, the Lithuanians could wait for an unfavorable decision or they could seize the region and present a fait accompli. Section 2. Preparations. Section 2.1. Decision. On November 3 and 4, 1922, a delegation of Prussian Lithuanians unsuccessfully pleaded the Lithuanian case to the Conference of Ambassadors. This failure became the impetus to organize the uprising. During a secret session on November 20, 1922, the Lithuanian government decided to organize the revolt. They organized that the diplomatic efforts through the League of Nations of the Conference of Ambassadors were fruitless and economic measures to sway the inhabitants towards Lithuania were too expensive and ineffective in international diplomacy. General Sylvester Žukauskas claimed that the Lithuanian army could disarm the small French regiment and take the region in 24 hours. However, a direct military action against France was too dangerous both in military and diplomatic sense. Therefore, it was decided to stage a local revolt using the example of the Polish Zhelekovsky's mutiny in October 1920. The preparations were left in the hands of Prime Minister Ernestas Galvanauskas. While he delegated specific tasks, the grand plan was kept secret even from the first Seimas or Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and thus very few Lithuanians understood the full role of government in the revolt. Thus, the main credit for organization of the revolt is sometimes given to Vincas Krėvė Mickevičius, chairman of the Lithuanian Riflemen's Union, which provided the manpower. Galvanauskas planned to present the revolt as a genuine uprising of the Lithuanian population against its German directorate and not against the French or Allied administration. Such plan was designed to direct Allied protests away from Lithuanian government and to exploit anti-German sentiment in Europe. Galvanauskas was careful to hide any links between the rebels and the Lithuanian government, so that if the revolt failed, he could blame the riflemen and the rebels absolving the government of any responsibility. Galvanauskas warned that all those involved could be subject to criminal persecutions if it was necessary for Lithuanians' prestige. Section 2.1. Propaganda campaigns. The local population was engaged in the political tug-of-war between Germany, Lithuania and Free City. Reunion with Germany was a political impossibility, but local Germans wished to preserve their political and cultural dominance in the region. While Prussian Lithuanians spoke the Lithuanian language, they had developed their own complex identity, including a different religion. The Lithuanians were seen as both economically and culturally backward people. Farmers and industry workers worried that cheaper produce and labor from Lithuania would destroy their livelihood. Therefore, the idea of a free city was gaining momentum. At the end of 1921, Arbeitsgemeinschaft für den Freistaat Memel collected 54,429 signatures out of 71,856 total eligible residents in support of the free state. Therefore, even before the decision to organize the revolt, Lithuania attempted to maximize its influence and attract supporters in the region. Lithuania restricted its trade to demonstrate region's economic dependence as it did not produce enough food. The economic situation was further complicated by the beginning of hyperinflation of the German mark, which the region used as its currency. The Lithuanian cause was also supported by industrialists who expected cheap labor and raw materials from Lithuania. Lithuanians also engaged in intense propaganda. They established and financed pro-Lithuanian organizations and acquired interest in local press. Many of these activities were coordinated by Lithuanian envoy Jonas Žilius, who received 500,000 German marks for such purposes. Banker Jonas Vailokaitis donated $12,500 for the cause and pledged another $10,000 if needed. Additional support was provided by Lithuanian Americans, including Antanas Ivaškevičius and Andrius Martusevičius. For several weeks before the revolt, the local press reported on alleged Polish plans for the region. This was designed to strengthen the anti-Polish sentiment and paint Lithuania as a more favorable solution. It seems that these actions had the intended result and public opinion shifted towards Lithuania. Section 2.3. International Diplomacy. Germany understood that the region would not be reattached, therefore they favored the lesser of two evils and tactically supported the interests of Lithuania. The Weimar Republic saw both Poland and France as its major enemies, while Lithuania was more neutral. Also, once Germany restored its might, it would be much easier to recapture the region from weaker Lithuania, from larger Poland. Already on February 22, 1922, the Germans unofficially informed the Lithuanians that they were not opposed to Lithuanian action in Klaipėda, and that, understandably, such a stance would never be officially declared. Such attitudes were later confirmed in the unofficial German-Lithuanian communications, and even during the revolt, when Berlin urged local Germans not to hinder to the Lithuanian plans. When the Allies contemplated turning Klaipėda into a free city like Danzig, Polish Foreign Minister Konstantin Skirmund believed that such a free city would hurt the Polish interest by allowing Germany to maintain its influence in the region. Skirmund instead supported the transfer of the region to Lithuania if Poland were secure unrestricted trade via the Niemen River and the port. At the same time, Poland was preoccupied by other issues and paid less attention to Klaipėda. Lithuania understood that a military action against Polish interest in the region could resume the Polish-Lithuanian war. To counter the expected backlash from Poland and France, the Lithuanians looked for an ally in Soviet Russia, which opposed a strong Polish state. On November 29, Soviet Foreign Minister Georgi Chicherin stopped briefly in Kaunas on his way to Berlin. In a conversation with Galvanauskas, Chicherin expressed support for Lithuanian plans in Klaipėda and declared that Soviet Russia would not remain passive if Poland moved against Lithuania. Section 2.4. Timing. On December 18, 1922, a committee of the Conference of Ambassadors scheduled the presentation of a proposal for the future of the region on January 10, 1923. While the content of the proposal was not known until after the start of the revolt, the Lithuanians expected the decision to be against their interest and hastened their preparations. Indeed, the committee proposed either creating a free city or transferring the region to Lithuania if it agreed to a union with Poland. January 1923 was also convenient as France was distracted by the occupation of the Ruhr and Europe feared the outbreak of another war. The domestic situation in Lithuania was also favorable. Galvanauskas, as the Prime Minister, had extensive powers while the first Seimas was deadlocked and the election of President Aleksandras Stulginskis, who strongly opposed the revolt, was contested. Section 3. Revolt. Section 3.1. Political actions. In late 1922, Lithuanian activists were sent to various towns and villages to deliver patriotic speeches and organize a number of pro-Lithuanian committees for the salvation of Lithuania Minor. On December 18, 1922, the Supreme Committee for the Salvation of Lithuania Minor, chaired by Martynas Jankus, was established in Klaipėda to unite all these committees. It was to lead the revolt and later organize a pro-Lithuanian regime in the region. According to Jankus' testimony to the Conference of Ambassadors in March 1923, up to 8,000-10,000 persons were united around the committee before January 10, 1923. On January 3, 1923, a Congress of the Committees authorized STSLM to represent the interest of the inhabitants of the entire region. However, at the time the organization was just a name and apart from issuing several declarations had no other activity. Some of its members admitted that they learned about the role in STSLM only after the revolt. On January 7, the STSLM published a proclamation, Broli Šauliai, alleging that the Lithuanians were persecuted by foreigners, declaring its resolve to take up arms to rid itself of slavery and pleading the Lithuanian Riflemen's Union for help. This became the official pretext for the riflemen to enter into the region on January 9. On January 9, the STSLM declared that based on the authorization of from other Salvation Committees to represent all inhabitants of the region, the STSLM usurped all power in the region, dissolved the directorate chaired by Vilius Steputaitis, and authorized Erdmondas Simonaitis to form a new five-member directorate within 3 days. The declaration also provided that the German and Lithuanian languages were given equal status as official language of the region. All political prisoners were to be released. Martial law was enacted. In addition to this declaration, the committee issued a French appeal to the French soldiers in which they, as fighters for noble ideas of freedom and equality, were asked not to fight against the will and achievements of the Lithuanian nation. On January 13, Simonaitis formed a new pro-Lithuanian directorate, which included Vilius Kaigalaitis, Martynas Rezgys, Jonas Toleikis and Kristupas Lekšas. On January 19, representatives of the committees for the Salvation of Lithuania Minor met in Šilutė and passed a five-point declaration asking for the region to be incorporated as an autonomous district into Lithuania. The document was signed by some 120 people. The region's autonomy was extended to local taxation, education, religion, court system, agriculture, social services. On January 24, the first Seimas accepted the declaration, thus formalizing the incorporation of the Klaipėda region. Antanas Smetona was sent as the chief envoy to the region. Section 3.2. Military actions. Galvanauskas enlisted the paramilitary Lithuanian Riflesmen Union to provide manpower for the revolt. Vincas Krėvė Mickevičius, chairman of the union, believed that the idea to organize the revolt originated within the organization, and Galvanauskas only tactically approved the plan while carefully distancing the government from the rebels. In December 1922, Krėvė Mickevičius met with Reichswehr's commander Hans von Sechs and was assured that the German army would not interfere with the Lithuanian plans in the region. Krėvė Mickevičius chiefly bought 1,500 guns, 5 light machine guns and 1.5 million bullets from the Germans. The military action was coordinated by Lithuanian counterintelligence officer and former Russian colonel Jonas Polovinskas, who changed his name to Jonas Budrys, which sounded more Prussian-Lithuanian. Later, his entire staff changed their last names to sound more Prussian-Lithuanian. According to memoirs of Steponas Darius, the revolt was first scheduled for the night of the new year, but the Lithuanian government pulled out based on negative intelligence report. Supporters of the revolt gathered in Kaunas and convinced the government to proceed. The delay jeopardized the mission as the secret could have leaked to the Allies. The revolt started on January 10, 1923. Arriving with trains to Kretinga and Tauragė, 1,090 volunteers crossed the border into the region. Among them were Steponas Darius and Vladas Putvinskis. They wore civilian clothes and had green armband with letters MLS for Mažosios Lietuvos Sukilėlis or Mažosios Lietuvos Savanoris, rebel volunteer of the Lithuanian Minor. Each man had a rifle and 200 bullets. The rebels had a total of 21 light machine guns, 4 motorcycles, 3 cars, 63 horses. In hopes to negotiate a peaceful retrieval of the French and to avoid any casualties, shooting was allowed only as the last result of self-defense. Galvanauskas ordered perfect behavior and no Lithuanian identification. In the Klaipėda region, these men were met by some 300 local volunteers, though Lithuanian historian Vygantas Vareikis disputed the accuracy of this assertion. More local men joined once the rebels reached cities. The rebels met little resistance, but struggled with cold winter weather, lack of transportation and basic supplies. The contingent was divided into three armed groups. The first and strongest group was ordered to take Klaipeda. The second group was sent to capture Pagėgi and secure the border with Germany, and the third to Šilutė. By January 11th, the pro-Lithuanian forces controlled the region, except for the city of Klaipeda. The French administrator Pestin refused to surrender, and fighting over Klaipeda broke out on January 15. The city was defended by 250 French soldiers, 350 German policemen, and 300 civilian volunteers. After a brief gunfight, a ceasefire was signed by Pestin and Budrys, and the French soldiers were interned in their barracks. During the fighting, 12 insurgents, 2 French soldiers, and 1 German policeman were killed. According to German sources, 1 French soldier died and 2 were injured. On January 16, the Polish ship Commandant Pilsudski entered the port of Klaipeda carrying Colonel Eugene Trosson, a member of the French military mission in Poland, and reinforcements to French troops. However, the ship soon departed as the fighting was over and ceasefire was in effect. On January 17-18, British cruiser HMS Calderon and 2 French torpedo boats Algerian and Senegalese reached Klaipeda. French cruiser Voltaire was on its way. The Lithuanians began organizing a local army, which included 317 men by January 24. The men were enticed by a guaranteed 6-month position and a wage of 2 liters a day. Section 4. Reaction and aftermath. France protested Lithuanian actions and issued direct military threats demanding to restore status quo ante. Britain protested but refrained from threats. There was fear that Lithuania had Soviet support, which meant that if either France or Poland initiated a military response, Soviet Russia would intervene, possibly causing another war. Poland protested but also feared wider repercussions. It offered military assistance but only France and Britain approved. On January 17, 1923, the Conference of Ambassadors decided to dispatch a special commission led by Frenchman Georges Clinchamp. The commission, with a handful of Allied troops, arrived on January 26 and almost immediately demanded that the rebels withdraw from the region, threatening to use force, but quickly backed down. On January 29, the Allies rejected the proposal to send troops to quash the revolt. France wanted to restore its administration, but Britain and Italy supported the transfer of the region to Lithuania. On February 2nd, the Allies presented a sternly worded ultimatum demanding withdrawal of all rebels from the region, disbandment of any armed forces, Steponaitis Directorate and the Supreme Committee of the Salvation of Lithuania Minor. At the same time, the League was making its final decision regarding the bitter territorial dispute over Vilnius region between Poland and Lithuania. On February 3rd, the League decided to divide a 6-kilometer-wide neutral zone established in the aftermath of the Želigovskis mutiny in November 1920. Despite Lithuanian protests, the division of the neutral zone proceeded on February 15th. In these circumstances, the League decided on an unofficial exchange. Lithuania would receive the Klaipeda region for the lost Vilnius region. Already on February 4th, the Allied ultimatum was replaced by a diplomatic note requesting that the transfer of the Klaipeda region would be orderly and not coerced. On February 11th, the Allies even thanked Lithuania for the peaceful resolution of the crisis. To further appease the League, the Simonaitis Directorate was disbanded on February 15th. Viktoras Gailius formed a provisional 5-member directorate, which included 2 Germans and 3 Prussian Lithuanians. On February 17th, the conference transferred the region to Lithuania under several conditions to be later formalized in the Klaipeda Convention. The region would be granted autonomy. Lithuania would compensate Allied costs of administration and assume German liabilities of war reparations, and the Neumann River would be internationalized. Lithuania accepted and thus the revolt was legitimized. The French and British ships left the port on February 19th. Initially, the proposed Klaipeda Convention reserved extensive rights for Poland to access, use and govern the port of Klaipeda. This was completely unacceptable to Lithuania, which had terminated all diplomatic ties with Poland over the Vilnius region. The stalled negotiations were referred to the League of Nations. The 3-member commission, chaired by American Norman Davis, prepared the final convention, which was signed by Great Britain, France, Italy, Japan and Lithuania in May 1924. The Klaipeda region became autonomous region under the unconditional sovereignty of Lithuania. The region had extensive legislative, judicial, administrative and financial autonomy and elected its own parliament. The port of Klaipėda was internationalized, allowing freedom of transit. The convention was hailed as a major Lithuanian diplomatic victory as it contained none of the special rights initially reserved for Poland and placed no conditions on Lithuanian sovereignty in the region. However, the convention severely limited the powers of the Lithuanian government and caused frequent debates on the relationship between central and local authorities. In 1920s, the relations between Lithuania and Germany under Foreign Minister Gustav Stresemann were rather normal. However, tensions began to rise after Adolf Hitler came to power. Weaknesses of the convention were exploited by Nazi Germany when it supported anti-Lithuanian activities and campaigned for reincorporation of the region into Germany, culminating in the 1939 ultimatum.